This is Smash Mouth Talk. If you can't accept that, then fuck off. I am your host, Louis B. I am your Brooklyn Puerto Rican assassin, broadcasting live from New York City. I am actually doubly honored to have Sleepy Salsa. He's a blogger with, and I said salsa with the Spanish accent. Oh, I'm such a spick today. This Sleepy Salsa, he is a blogger with the blog thelastbastille.wordpress.com, and also our favorite Kiwi. I don't know if you guys heard, I hosted his show when he was on vacation. He is he's rich with that blue shield money, and if you want a strong erection, I suggest you use Blue Shield. So check his show out. It's the immortal Vinnie Eastwood, and of course he hosts the Vinnie Eastwood Show live from New Zealand. There you go. How did I have a brain fart? And go to his show, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. It's live Monday through Friday on American Freedom Radio. And of course he's filming himself right now. So he turned on his camera, so hopefully he's wearing pants. So today, this is the first hour we're going to be talking about the Common Law Court, which is a citizen-run court. But I should have just asked him that. And the second hour, we're going to be talking about guns, because everyone's talking about guns, whether we should ban them, what should we do to assault rifles, limit the amount of bullets, and all that. All that loveliness. So anyways, gentlemen, how you guys doing?
Somewhat fabulous.
Somewhat fabulous. So how was your day? Did you
Well, we walked up and down the main street of Auckland today. Biggest chemtrail protest we've ever had, which means it was like maybe about 20 people or something. It's normally, I think the first one I did, it was just me and a mate. Second one we did four intersections around the city, and we had about maybe 12 people. Third one we did was in Hamilton, New Zealand, and we had maybe 14 people. And today we had about 20, and we went down the main street waving our placards, 100-watt megaphone, full-body camouflage, with a paintball mask on to look really scary and intimidating, and gas masks and everything all over. I think we caused quite a stir, but...
So what was the point of this?
Well, the point is to not wake people up. The point is just to let all the awake people know, and even specifically just the people in the protest, that you're not alone. You know, you're not the only one who can see the chemtrails. You're not the only one who knows what's going on. Also to have a few laughs and have some fun while we're doing it. And
so basically, it was a circle jerk.
That's right.
Okay. Just so you know.
This is the astute analysis that you get from Louis B. on the Crotch Shot Radio, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, of course, yes. Yeah, I call it how I see it. You know what I mean? I just...
Louis, you just put the anal into analysis, you know?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thank you. So anyways, yeah, Sleepy, how you doing?
I am doing well and fine this wonderful January evening, Louis. Thanks for asking.
You're welcome. So, you're a blogger with The Last Bastille. In fact, you're the one that told me about the Common Law Court. And, you know, I used it to bring charges against Luke Rakowski, but the first question would have to be, which everyone will probably be asking, what is the Common Law Court?
Well, Louis, the Committee of Safety Common Law Court, the COSCLC, I guess you could describe it as a citizen's grand jury of sorts. Mm-hmm. Let me explain a little bit what the problem has been in the Patriot community, as well as the various political dissident circles, and then I'll kind of segue into what it's about. If anyone's ever paid attention, various types of political dissidents, including constitutionalists, have unfortunately turned infighting into an art form. It's gotten so bad to the point that those within the Patriot community have been slandered libeled and defamed by those very folks who claim to pursue the same ends that the other fellow does. So the real problem with internal balkanization, also known as infighting, same thing, is that by mentioning any particular examples of it, especially if it's sensitive details, you inadvertently perpetuate it. Now, this is because an individual, even one who is not party to a dispute and refuses to take sides, will be accused by the followers of one of the disputed parties to be secretly siding with one against the other. So the only real way around this, so in other words, the adherents of A and the adherents of B will always be at each other's throats, and even people who are just, you know, neutral, just other folks who just heard about the dispute. So the only real way around this is to have an objective third-party arbitrator whose procedures and rulings are agreed to by the contending parties in the attempt to finally put the dispute to rest. Put another way, there's too much in the alternative media, Louis, that is, I guess you could call it trial by press. And according to the Bill of Rights, we're supposed to have a trial by jury. So if we're going to self-regulate, i.e. be self-disciplined enough as political dissidents in order to eventually get to the point of actually securing our liberties, we have to be able to deal with our fellow compatriots as civilly as possible, because we're supposed to work with each other against our common enemy. So obviously, so we have to move us to resolve disputes internally.
So is that the idea of the last Bastille? Because I thought it was just a fish that wore a suit of armor or something.
Actually, no, the name for the blog, I explained that in a different article, but that's completely different. The Last Bastille is my blog. The Committee of Safety Common Law Corps, the COSCLC, is the organization that is involved with resolving disputes. And Louis, if you don't mind, I'd like to explain briefly the meaning behind the words of the organization, the title of it.
Okay, which will probably bring me to my next question. What are the principles of the CLC?
Okay, well, Louis, during the American Revolutionary War for Independence, Committees of Safety, COS, were instrumentally pivotal in conducting the war effort. Following the battles of Lexington and Concord, one of their chief functions was to try criminal cases, although not civil ones. Those were done after the war. Given that the British imperial court system had broken down, and I would also postulate the what would pass itself off as the federal court system would be something akin to the British imperial one of the 1760s and 70s. Now, these COS were also constantly engaged in the task of determining individual loyalties towards the cause for independence. Those who chose to remain as Tories were usually ostracized until they chose to join the local association. Now, the organization is also called the Committee of Safety Common Law Court, so let's look at those words. So classical liberal philosophers have maintained that the law is not intended as a tool of tyrannical oppression, as many political dissidents unfortunately these days interpret it as such, because the original purpose of the law is supposed to be a form of collective self-defense. As Frederick Bastiat says, quote, its mission is to prevent the rights of one from interfering with those of another, end quote. So while it may have been based in part on l'etalonnoir, the principle of justice was always based on the absence of plunder. So the Committee of Safety Common Law Court, the COSCLC, is just that neutral third-party arbitrator that is badly needed to bring balance to the patriot community. By ingeniously using the internet as a tool in order to enhance capabilities, such as ease of communication, like we're doing right now, and overcoming difficulties, such as the lack of geographical proximity, since everybody's kind of scattered all about, the COSCLC provides the fairest means of dealing with disruptions between dissidents within such a context. For the sake of comparison, it would not be too far off the mark to describe the COSCLC as the epitome of what the Dispute Resolution Organization, or DRO, libertarian concept should have been, given that it is an organization whose very purpose is to resolve disputes.
So basically the CLC are middle arbitrators between two disputing parties.
Neutral, yes.
And can I ask, is there a central website where people can go and access this network?
Yes, of course. If you are interested in learning more about the Committee of Safety Common Law Corps, and especially if you are interested in volunteering to serve, because Lord knows they could use plenty of volunteers, they are located at www.committee.org, committee.org/court with capital C, committee.org/court, capital C, and you can follow the instructions from there to learn in more gratuitous detail how the organization works, as well as how to go about volunteering. But this is just a brief synopsis of the what I was just describing just a moment ago, just a very, very brief synopsis of what it is. And quite frankly, I have looked around various political dissident circles, including the Patriot community specifically, and not one organization I have found is seriously dealing with the number one threat to the Patriot community, which is internal balkanization, other than the COSCLC. So these guys are fundamentally important, because if we cannot work with each other, why in God's name can we expect to push against, to combine our efforts and push against the establishment that equally oppresses us all?
Well, it seems to me that you fight against common enemies. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? And we should come together on that basis, knowing that a lot of the founding fathers really hated each other.
Yeah,
but they understood that you know, the guy down the road from me who's just, you know, a bit of a douchebag or whatever, maybe I don't like him, he's not actually likely to try and take my guns and try and enslave me with taxes. So how about we agree on the points that we can and move forward on that basis? And maybe once we've got a society that isn't about to be ruthlessly exterminated by ruthless sociopathic criminal scumbaggery, then we can hash out whatever details.
Yeah, my goodness. I mean, I'm reading this book that I was talking privately with Sleepy Sauce about. It's called, like, let me grab it right here, The United States Constitution, A Graphic Adaptation. And, I mean, they really go into how during the whole ratification process, they were at each other's throats. They had to take it to the people. I mean, the states wanted to keep all the power. They wanted a weaker central government, you know, but in order to keep everything together. But, I mean, that's the official tangent of the show. But, yeah, I'm just agreeing with how they hated each other.
Yeah, it's funny because I've been I don't know why people turn to me sometimes, but I know a lot of kind of high level patriots and truthers, and every now and again they'll be going through real rough times, like real depressed, so they'll be real pissed off with one person or the other, and they approach me and start saying, "Well, this guy said this and that and the other," and instead of reading those things, I can't be really bothered reading a whole lot, really.
Mm-hmm.
I instead talk to the people and kind of just put them in their place and just go, "Look, bro, in this movement, we're all like that. We're all traumatized, damaged goods, people who've got these type of tics, and some of us have gotten paranoid. Some of us are really unhealthy or whatever. We've got massive problems, and it's impossible for us to get along." And some of the times it really disillusions people and they want to cast the whole movement aside.
Okay.
We got
James on the line, and also, which one's Amit? I don't know which one's Amit, Connecticut or California. Well, we got James from Texas on. James, if you want to say something, feel free to jump into the conversation. Let me get Connecticut. Connecticut, how you doing?
Hello?
We can hear you now, Connecticut.
Yep. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Amit?
Yeah, it's me.
Oh, okay, yeah, because it's usually Florida for you. All right, so you wanted to say something?
Yeah, all right, so we're talking about fragmentation and internal conflict. These are local countermeasures against that the early colonists had to set up during the war effort in order to maintain control. The problem is that it seems to me that ever since the Civil War, we've lost the entire momentum of smaller centralized government. How to take it back is a tough cookie to crumble. I mean, you're talking about reversing everything from the Civil War onward to now. I mean, it's kind of sad that the entire, the entire social push towards abolition of slavery was used to basically incite a monolithically large and overbearing centralized government, and basically Trump's centralized government over small local governments. How to go about reversing that? I'm not sure how that can be accomplished, really, because it's almost basically it's almost like telling and negotiating with a guy with, you know, since we're talking about guns, I'll just give this example. How do you really negotiate with a guy who's got a gun and you don't? In the end, doesn't he have the end all veto leverage just to say, hey, I don't care, I'm going to do it my way because I've got the guns, I've got the tanks, and for all those who lived through the civil rights movement, I've got the dogs and I've got the fire hoses. So,
yeah.
I mean, how do you negotiate? I mean, the colonists tried to do this with King George, and he basically had the delegates hung, quartered, and castrated, not to mention tarred and feathered. I don't understand how we can go about, you know, diplomatically going to someone who's got a gun. I mean, my dad tried to talk down this armed robbery that he had to go through, and it didn't work too well for him. Yeah,
Michael, you've made a really interesting point there, and you heard of the free man on the land movement and all of that kind of thing. I've had dozens and dozens of these people on my show, and what they do technically works, but you know what they all have in common? All of these free men on the land who no longer have to pay their taxes or be enslaved by the system, they're all utterly broke and constantly harassed. That's called freedom, because you're trying to argue with somebody who doesn't argue. They simply shoot you or harass you.
I think we're living in a time where I am not necessarily under the tyranny of a tyrant, of a fascist, of a monarchy that still rules with the presumption of, you know, divine right to rule. You know, I'm not living under a tyranny of that. I'm living under a tyranny of my neighbor's ignorance and stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, that almost seems like it's a losing battle, because the first thing you have to do in a democracy is fight the people. I mean, it almost seems like you have to get them to do anything before you can even go talk to these head honcho guys. And even
it's actually kind of funny you mentioned that, because I was watching this documentary on Martin Luther King yesterday, since Monday is Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah.
And I just came to the realization, if it wasn't for people like Dr. King, no one would have gotten off their ass to do anything. Everyone would have just continued being happy, being little slaves, not doing anything, until someone got it started. And I run into this all the time, especially since I've gone after Luke. They're like, oh, well, Luke has done this, Luke has done that. What have you done? No. The real question is, what have you done? No, you would just rather throw money at one patriot rock star, as Sleepy would put it, you know, to do all the work. But we still haven't had that whole activation yet. I mean, Sleepy, what are your when it comes to this? I mean, when you guys do, when the COC does reach a decision, seeing how the whole attitude is, and this is the question that I've gotten myself, why should their decision be respected?
Okay, well, it should be kept in mind the entire time that I think what you're getting at is enforcement, correct?
Well, yeah, how are the decisions enforced as well?
Okay, sure. Well, once a I'm going to just keep this as simple as possible in the interest of time. Essentially, once the grand jury has come to decide that there is probable cause for an indictment, they issue it, the accused gets it, received by email, and then if it turns out that there's obviously at that point the accused pretty much has a choice to either respond to the indictment or not. If he does decide to respond to it, then it's going to go before the chief jury, and then they're going to just choose on matters of guilt and innocence. And actually, that's happened before. However, and then, of course, the results of that are published. Interestingly, if they decide not to respond to it, then the indictment is still published instead of as a verdict. It's published instead as an unanswered indictment. Now, whether the CLC produces an unanswered indictment or a verdict, once it's published, then the enforcement is in the hands of the Patriot community as well as just political dissidents in general. And the enforcement mechanism, what their responsibility is to use ostracism. For instance, if you – let's just say that let's say next month, theoretically, hypothetically, next month the CLC comes out with a, let's say, unanswered indictment against Joe Schmo. And Joe Schmo did 20 awful different things. Now, you, as a fellow dissident or part of the Patriot community, you basically look and see, like, wow, this guy did awful thing, A, B, C, D. Maybe we shouldn't associate with him. Maybe, just maybe, if he's got a store, especially if it's an online store, and he's selling stuff like merchandise or T-shirts or, dare I say, a documentary he made himself,
And perhaps some poisonous drink mix.
Okay, we don't need to get too specific. The point is that it could be anybody.
We're talking about Alex Jones, fuck.
No. I don't want to get specific. The point is it could be anybody. So the point here is that it's like, well, if it's proved that for probable cause, in the case of an unanswered indictment, that so-and-so did all this horrible crap, then maybe other dissidents should get away and ostracize them because who knows what their deal is. They may be a useful idiot, or they may even be controlled opposition, but at the end of the day, does it really matter? I would argue, no, it doesn't, because at the end of the day, they're still harmful for those of us who are serious about securing our liberties. Because part of securing your liberties is making sure you associate with people of good character who are interested like you are about your freedoms. And
right,
people,
so
who
basically,
prima donnas, people who want to be prima donnas and, you know, yak all day and cause division and harm and the establishment and laugh at us is very harmful.
The upshot is you've just defined that you have no enforcement ability. You can't force anybody to do anything. That's not enforcement. That's recommendation, right? Like when the government appoints a committee that makes recommendations, they mean nothing without force behind them. You can't stop anybody. I mean, can I ask you? Could you cite a single example of somebody's website who has been shut down or had all of their listeners turn off them or all of their revenue dry up because you've exposed them? No.
Not to the degree that you're demanding. There has been less traffic that I'm vaguely aware of, and there have been a, let's just say, certain disreputable individuals.
Could you give a specific example? You said there's less traffic?
Sure. Like
How many to how many?
Well, I cannot cite any figures right offhand because, unfortunately, they're not publicly available, so all of this is kind of secondhand information as far as I'm aware because I'm a couple degrees
removed.
So you
don't know if their visitation even
went
down?
Let me answer your question. The case that came before Louis, which we'll get into, was the case of Swan versus Light. And Rick Light, who is the accused, there's that whole list of horrible stuff. And if we have time, we can get into that if you want, but it would be better if we focus on Louis' case. Rick Light, he's been ostracized in a big, big way. And so, no, I cannot give you quantitative figures like how you want, which is a fair question. But again, the COSCLC, it's not a coercive government entity. It's a private organization that goes and proves through trial by jury instead of this horrible system, it's just trial by press of the alternative media, which is nothing but the trifecta of slander, libel, and defamation. I mean, please, how childish. But instead goes to the evidence, and they confer with each other, they double-check, triple-check, and if they find that there's at least probable cause, they will then issue an indictment to the accused. If he doesn't respond, it goes public. If he does respond, they go before the jury and try it again. But the whole point is have the process be fair and not have this mudslinging that's so public that paints all of us and makes everyone look like loonies. That
I mean,
maybe handle, at least handle in a private channel until such time that it's ready for public consumption.
I mean, for me, speaking as far as the case that I brought to the COC, the reason why I brought it wasn't so much because I knew there's still a lot of sheeple in the movement that no matter what are still going to follow Luke, still going to donate to him and whatever. The reason why I brought it up to him, brought it to the COC, was so that people could see that it's not a matter of jealousy. It's not a matter of mudslinging and slandering him. If other people who do not know him, when presented with the evidence that I provided, could come to the same conclusion I did. So
right.
it was more for validation of what I was saying for years. So that's usually what I took out of it, because I know for a fact that, you know, there are people out there that they're not going to pay attention to the evidence that I provided to them. They're not going to look at it. They're just going to dismiss it as COINTELPRO.
Yeah, that's true. And what I see as a major problem within the truth movement, it's quote unquote cult followings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We follow so many people and follow them blindly.
Yeah, and Any of the work.
I just had a question. I mean, this is just for me and the rest of the audience. Louis, are you able to put the website of the CLSS, or sorry, I'm really bad with acronyms. And
do you know how to spell the word committee? COMMITTEE.
Yeah.
.org/court. So it's committee.org/court.
Yeah, committee.org/court. I mean, just to make it simple. But I will copy and paste it, put it in the chat room again. Boom, there we go.
Appreciate it.
Let me introduce the guests again, because we got some people that just joined us. We got Vinny Eastwood of The Vinny Eastwood Show, and also Sleepy Salsa of thelastbastille.wordpress.com. And we are talking about the common law courts,
which, in my summation, I mean, based upon what you've said, it's actually to take away what is often dismissed as COINTELPRO or disinformation, so that if you're critiquing somebody within the movement, mm-hmm. there is, in fact, a jury process, a verification process, rather than somebody making an accusation
exactly.
without backing it up with evidence. And I believe this is actually an essential part. And I don't know if you guys know this, but I actually was part of a cult once. I had no idea that it was a cult. These guys were actually talking common law and setting up a new system so that we wouldn't have to be under the New Zealand government and stuff like that. And they're creating all these businesses and that sort of thing. And this guy who was running it, Shane Wenzel, he was a total psychopath, right? He was having sex with the girls who were running the offices. He's an alleged pedophile. He's always very violent, throwing stuff around and being generally psychotic, swearing, that sort of thing. And so once I realized what he was doing, was he was attempting to get out of the New Zealand government's jurisdiction so he could commit any crime he wants, including dealing drugs, committing pedophilia, or dishonest business practice, things of this nature. And so as soon as I found that out, I was down there with my camera, filming him, assaulting myself and assaulting my friend. And every time he tries to recruit another New Zealand activist, most of them know me, so they say, "Hey, Vinny, have you heard about this guy?" And I go, "Watch the 7-minute video of him assaulting me and my mate and lying blatantly on camera, and you tell me whether you want to put yourself in harm's way like I did.
Right. We got a call, we got a caller from North Dakota on. So if you're calling from North Dakota, hello.
Hey,
Patrick?
Yes.
No, who is it?
Patrick.
Oh, that's what I said, Patrick. Yo, how come? What, are you calling from a tin can? What the fuck?
Calling from a phone.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn. What? You calling from the Obama phone? The sound quality sucks dick. What the fuck?
I got a welfare phone. Okay. I don't know.
Oh. I got the Obama phone.
Hey, my dad got that.
Oh. Well, how's that work? Do you get good service on that shit? You know, if you are low income, you know, keep Obama in president. Oh, fuck. That speaking about, oh, well, anyways, don't want to go into another fucking,
Obama rant.
Service out of those phones right here.
Yeah, I know. Anyways, Sleepy, what do you think about the ADL's attempt to link the, you know, common law courts in general to right-wing racist groups?
Well, I mean, this is all just establishment propaganda. You know, it's part of the info war. I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, it's actually kind of funny too to draw a parallel to that. I mean, you remember when they first started with the different self-proclaimed militia groups a while back?
Right.
Well, and now they're actually moving towards anyone who calls himself an anarcho-capitalist or voluntarist, which are just offshoots from more libertarian crowd. So now it's funny. It's like the SPLC, just as the establishment mouthpiece for identifying political dissidents, they're just kind of going out after pretty much almost everybody now. I think the only people they're avoiding are some specific types of environmentalists that I'm aware of. But that's it. They pretty much are going after everybody now. So even if you're more of a kind of a nerdy libertarian type, and you just don't like the coercive nature of the state, you're just as bad as, you know, a militia guy or whatever, you know, term they come up with next. I find it particularly amusing. It's almost like they're running out of things to get upset about. And I find it interesting, too, that the SPLC likes to bill itself as a supposed civil liberties organization when, quite frankly, everything they talk about is pretty much about anything but.
Well, sure. They often link Ron Paul supporters to being Tea Party guys. I don't know where they can draw the conclusion that Ron Paul supporters are Tea Party guys. I don't know. I don't know if he's got any direct affiliation with the Tea Party, to be honest with you.
Well, not really, because especially since the Tea Party got hijacked by the Republican Party, and now it's like, oh, we're going to support Romney. Romney, really? Tea Party guys, really? Really? You're going to support Romney? Really? Really? Schmucks.
It almost seems like these type of ventures almost can only thrive in certain areas, like New Hampshire, which is trying to push the Free State Project.
I don't see the difference supporting Romney and supporting Ron Paul. It's like they're both, you know, part of the same secret societies. Like, you know, I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, but let's keep it focused on the CLC.
I was wanting to interject something here, Louis.
Yeah, go ahead.
Have you noticed how most of us don't actually understand really anything about most of the things that we think and most of the things that we do? Like, I have no idea how this computer actually works. I wouldn't be able to take it apart if I tried in a million years, right?
Right.
And this actually also, I think, relates very much to politics. And I'm feeling a bit tired today because I was up last night to about maybe 4:30 in the morning.
Oh,
and then I had to go.
Sleep.
No, I was drinking and having at a party. And
oh.
What was interesting about this party is that every single person that I talked to at this party really wanted to talk with me about conspiracy theories, about things that really mattered in their lives. Like one guy told me something that he didn't really tell anybody, that on his 21st birthday, he had to fly halfway across the country to see his mother, who had gotten a double brain hemorrhage on his 21st birthday, only to be told by the doctor that you've got two choices. You can either pull your mother off life support, or you can deliver the rest of her life as a vegetable.
Wow.
And he knew that his mother would never, ever want to live life as a vegetable. So at the age of 21, he had to pull the cord on his own mother.
Mm.
You know? And what this conversation, it was like, I was kind of like bouncing around these different circles, these different people, and having these really intense conversations about trauma that people have suffered, and about relationships, and about conspiracy, and about understanding concepts that are really highbrow and all that sort of stuff. And I was just thinking to myself this morning while I was at the protest, how myopic is my life? Because I can't do small talk anymore. I can't talk about things that don't matter.
Right.
I really am only comfortable talking about things that are intense. I'm really only comfortable talking about things that are highbrow, things that are traumatic, just to speak of and think of. And we were talking about libertarian and fascism and right wing and left wing and all that kind of stuff. And what Bill Cooper said about this is that right wing isn't fascism. Fascism is actually left wing.
It's extreme left.
National socialism, you know. Guards on every street corner, public censors, watching what you do and all of that kind of stuff. It's a totalitarian socialist state. And the argument of left and right, meaning a totalitarian government that focuses on business versus a totalitarian government that just focuses on being a totalitarian government, they're actually both left-wing principles. There's nothing right-wing about them. Right-wing is about individuals. It's individualism versus collectivism, and people don't know the difference. It's really concerning to me. This very, very basic principle that I only learned maybe a year plus ago, that there was actually a difference. And I think everybody had best realized that you are either right-wing, which meaning you believe that you should be your own master and nobody should be able to compel you or tell you to do anything unless you hurt somebody or damage their private property. Or you're a collectivist, which means you believe that you both can't take care of yourself and believe that nobody else can take care of themselves, and so you need authority figures in your life at all times telling you what to do and forcing you to do it if you don't want to.
Thoughts? Anybody?
Sometimes you also need to be silent for a moment just to let things sink in.
Right.
And another thing that happened in a conversation last night is we were talking about the concept of God. Like, my concept of God is very different to religious people's or anything like that, you know. And this girl who was an introvert, you know how when you're having a conversation and there is no gap in between what people are saying? One person talks, right, and people aren't really listening to them. They're simply waiting for their turn to speak, to dive right in. And there's no pause. There's no ability for people who are introverted and maybe perhaps a little shy to actually enter the conversation. And also at that point, you recognize that if all you're doing is waiting for your turn to speak and you're not really listening, it means regardless of how highbrow the topics you're talking about, nothing actually gets through and you don't have the ability to process what it is that you're hearing. That was a really profound realization for me that I'm an asshole. You know, I don't try to listen to other people speak. I don't really try to hear and feel what they're saying, and I don't allow time for it to sink in.
Isn't it?
And I think many of us in this movement are like that.
Yeah, isn't it because we think that we got the answers to everything? We think we're know-it-all, so it's like it doesn't matter what anyone else has to say.
because we feel we have the answer.
No, it's pride. Like every human being is, you know, pride comes before the fall, and yeah, that's basically the biggest flaw of humanity is we're so proud.
Yeah, and I believe that's where a lot of the infighting comes from. And, you know, that and not recognizing that, hey, they're complete assholes out there that will knowingly sell something with mercury, you know, tangy tangerine, and you know, claim that you're going to make $1 million a year off of it, and you're poisoning each other, you know, and not giving a crap when, you know, you should really be thinking, all right, how I'm going to help somebody else and also become more independent from my government. And also
that has
be aware.
Mercury in it? No shit?
Yeah.
Beyond Tangy Tangerine, what Alex Jones sells?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Of course.
But,
yeah, because...
look at the Mark Dice video.
Yeah.
So if you Google Mark Dice, Alex Jones, Tangy Tangerine... it should come up with the video, and there's been so many people who come out and attack him who know him personally, who have a business relationship with him. The owner of American Freedom Radio, Danny Romero, has told me some really, really horrific stories and advertisers stolen wholesale and calling out Alex Jones and him actually admitting it and things like that. And taking a radio transmitter off him, changing
mm-hmm.
the locks on the transmitter, and then broadcasting his own show with it and co-opting his business partner and stuff like that. Jack Blood getting a call while he's having dinner with his mate from Alex Jones saying that his mate's undermining him and trying to sabotage his show and all of that kind of stuff. And then his friend across the table's phone rings after he finishes the conversation. And it's Alex Jones saying Jack Blood's trying to sabotage you and trying to destroy everything. Infighting.
Right.
He knows the New World Order tactics of command and control warfare, of divide and conquer, and he uses it on us. And
so,
as I mentioned before about cult followings, heaven forbid I should turn into some form of douchebag. I would hope that people like the Common Law Court and all my friends who are the chief, you know, scumbaggery exposers, as far as I'm concerned, of the world, would expose me utterly and completely and take me off air and put me out of business so that I couldn't continue to lead people in a direction that is not their own, that they don't have full awareness of. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
But if I can say something, I got to disagree with earlier when... somebody characterized fascism as a left-wing movement that's taking the modern definitions of the term and implanting it on that. The left and right-wing definition originally arose from the seating at the French Assembly, okay? So those on the right were the ones who were the most authoritarian. At the furthest right, those who believed the king could do no wrong, they were divinely appointed by God. And on the left side, not quite furthest to the left, but you had Frederick Bastiat, who you mentioned earlier. And on the furthest left, you had Pierre-Joseph Proudhon, the first who seriously considered himself an anarchist. So what we – and that was Frederick Bastiat, I mean, classical liberalism.
Are you saying that the definitions have actually been flipped around? Right-wing is actually left-wing and left-wing is actually right-wing?
Yes. And what we would call limited constitutional government would be on the left.
Okay.
All right. You happy,
Mike? It's amazing. Okay. Well, I haven't seen any documentation to that effect. And why is it that right-wingers are all now today talking about their civil liberties and trying to be libertarian and anarcho-syndicalist, and those on the left
they call themselves right-wingers? I mean, people can call themselves anything. That's the modern definition. But, I mean, this could be looked up. I don't have a source on hand right now, but
okay,
common
well,
knowledge
Mike,
where
Mike, people Mike, sitting Mike, Mike, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we are talking about the common law court. Before this hour's out, I would like Sleepy to discuss the case between me and Luke Rakowski and how it benefits everyone. So, Sleepy, can you please explain that, please?
Yeah, sure. Glad to do that. All right, I'm going to run through the brief synopsis of it, and then, time permitting, we can go through at least a couple details to kind of show the quality work being done here. All right, so in the matter of, Louis Baez versus Lukasz Rutkowski. This is COSCLC unanswered indictment number 120301. This was issued on December 10th of 2012. The grand jury found probable cause on 5 counts against Luke Rutkowski. And I put a link in the chat room, and somebody can do that again, go back up and repost it so that people can go grab it. But it is available from the committee.org. All right, so let's go through the synopsis. Count one is fraud. The accused, under false pretenses, before I continue, just keep in mind that the accused is Luke Rutkowski. Count one, fraud. The accused, under false pretenses, collected monies from individuals who were led to believe that the donations were going to be allocated towards the 9/11 first responders' medical expenses, as well as the equipment expenses for We Are Change. Count two, embezzlement. The accused embezzled funds from donations intended for the medical expenses of 9/11 first responders, as well as We Are Change equipment, into his own personal bank account between 2007 and 2009. He has collected funds exceeding $60,000 and has made large cash withdrawals nearly matching those deposits. Count three, libel. The accused repeatedly damaged the reputations of those individual members of We Are Change who inquired into the accounting, as required by their own code of conduct, by insinuating that those members work for the government, as well as answering direct questions in a deceptive manner. Count four, extortion. The accused has deceived the We Are Change membership about the organization's legal status and raised money on a false pretext. Count five, fraud. The accused solicited for donations intended for a legal defense fund on behalf of himself and two other We Are Change members and retained all the contributions after the charges that warranted the legal defense fund were dropped. So to recap just very briefly, we have one count of embezzlement, one count of libel, one count of extortion, and two counts of fraud. This is in the case of Baez versus Rutkowski, COSCLC unanswered indictment number 120301.
Why haven't you taken him to a real court? Are these actual crimes that he's committed, or are these just, you know, truth of crimes, like he's been a bit dishonest here?
Okay, well, part of the reason was because when I first started off, I did try to take them through traditional legal means, but they didn't view it as important.
That's kind of typical for the government.
That's why you file a private prosecution in the courts.
But
that's what happens
untouched
here in New Zealand. If you can't, if the justice system will not bring somebody to justice, you file a private prosecution in order to bring them to justice yourself.
Right. I don't think we have that sort of thing here. And since it was kind of hard for me because I personally didn't lose any money, there weren't any damages other than to my reputation in the group.
That's defamation.
Yeah,
you can sue for that.
Yeah, but that's really hard to prove. And really, do I really want to deal with the same government that's trying to kill me? I mean, I really just wanted to, like I said before, I just wanted to get, validation for what I believe was true, that he was a thief, by people that didn't know him from an independent party. So I just felt that this was more of a you know, more patriotic way of doing it.
Of which the results are
either you know, either way, you know, I wasn't going to get the results that I wanted. Luke being fully discredited and locked up for what he did. I mean, so at least I could say, look, I didn't do this as a motivation of jealousy or revenge. It was just what's right is right. This is an independent party that I brought in that I had to, now, it wasn't enough just to get them the evidence and tell them, hey, Luke's guilty. Look at this. I had to put everything in context. Everything had to be laid out in front of them. I mean, the burden of proof was tremendous in order to get this.
Well, Louis, since you were the accuser, that kind of makes sense, especially considering that Luke's reputation is on the line. And Vincent, I understand you're concerned about enforcement. Let me add on to that. I've written about vetting and ostracism before, and since ostracism is the enforcement mechanism, let me kind of emphasize a little bit more about that. Now, generally speaking about ostracism outside the context of the COSCLC, it has now been broached that picking and choosing whom you associate with is actually much more important than most dissidents would give credit to, considering that ostracism is recognized here as a powerful negative incentive. If such is indeed the case, how come most political dissidents don't use it more often to their own advantage? For example, Stefan Molyneux has explained in his, in one of his books, Everyday Anarchy, quote, "Anarchists recognize the power of implicit and voluntary social contract and the power of both positive incentives, such as pay and career success, as well as negative incentives, such as social disapproval, economic exclusion, and social ostracism." He goes on to say in the sequel book, Practical Anarchy, quote, "In the past, undesired social behavior was punished through ostracism and risks ameliorated through voluntary friendly societies. A man who left his wife and children, or a woman who got pregnant out of wedlock, was no longer welcome in decent society." So, continuing on with this, contracts can be enforced without resorting to violence. The tool of economic and social ostracism is the most powerful weapon for dealing with those who repeatedly violate moral and social rules. We do not need to throw people into economically unproductive debtors' prisons or send men with guns to kidnap and incarcerate them. All we need do, here's the key point, all we need do is publish their crimes for all to see and let the natural justice of society take care of the rest, end quote. And let me finish with this one other additional point by someone else who's a different type of dissident. Now, I'm sure that even constitutionalists can appreciate the liberty of association that they currently enjoy pursuant to the First Amendment. So in the parallel context of dealing with the state itself, especially Big Brother, the secret police, and their many subsidiaries, ostracism is a devastatingly effective tool against institutionalized bullying. As Gary Hunt explained in his Vortex article, quote, "It is time for us to change the game around and get them," meaning the bad guys, the government, "to fear us. Not through violence, rather through exposure," here's a key point, "through exposure and removal of those who would seek to undermine our ability to function productively. It is time for us to be as serious about ridding ourselves of these subversive elements as we are about our individual causes, for all are doomed to failure unless we regain control of our own activities." And
well, here's the deal, though. I mean, we've seen throughout history that social ostracization works on those who typically are not well-equipped, both physically and mentally, to handle mass opposition. Our government very much is. So you're saying that the way to enact what the founding fathers wanted, which was that the people should not be afraid of the government, but that the government should be afraid of its people. You're talking about society ostracizing the government. If I'm assuming correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong here.
You're slightly wrong. Really, I'm not.
Well, I mean, it's really difficult to get a whole bunch of guys who are used to using blunt force and shaming them. Again, you're going back to the whole situation of, you know, you're going to go to an armed robber and say, shame on you.
Okay,
you're
going
to have 500 people say, shame on you, to the bank robber. That's not going to stop the guy. He's going to start riddling people with lead.
It wouldn't stop him any more than a gun ban area sign stops a mass shooter.
All right, stop for one second. Okay, you said society. That's the slight mistake you're referring to. I am not referring to society, whatever the hell that is. I am referring to individuals and groups of individuals, who have chosen to oppose the establishment in some way. They are called political dissidents. There are many different types of them. So a good chunk of them are what is known as the patriot community, and at a separate time, I can provide a definition for that. The point is, anybody who's like an anti-establishment type, who cares about their freedom and liberty, are already supposed to be of like mind, even amidst the various different political ideologies that exist for doing so. However, we all have this common entity, this thing, whether you want to be, use a libertarian term of the state, or you want to call it the central government like the constitutionalists do, or however you want to define the enemy entity. The point is, we all have similar values and all that, so we all should be working together. So if you have disruptive elements, a disruptive individual, whether it's controlled opposition or just a useful idiot, there is a way to contain the problem and cut it out before it has a chance to harm everybody. So when you mention about stopping guys with guns, I'm sorry, sir, but that's completely inapplicable to what I'm talking about, which is something very, very, very specific. And I would highly recommend, I'll put it in the chat room so you can read it later.
Yeah.
I would implore you to read Gary Hunt's article on Vortex. It's very, very important.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you're absolutely right. We're not talking about fighting a violent person with words. What we're talking about is fighting somebody who uses words with words. You know, it's kind of a resistance of scale. And the ostracization of people who are perhaps guilty of some form of scumbaggery, lying or deception of some description. We've just founded the core principles for guerrilla media, and we did have a debate about if we invite journalists into the fold, how in fact could we actually punish them, at all, considering we have no real physical enforcement mechanism. And omission, ostracization, and exposure are death blows to a journalist's credibility. If you never mention them, and if you do, you're exposing the bad things that they have done, there's not too many people who can survive a hit like that. But of course, it's about exposure of scale. I can't, for example, reach the entirety of the American public audience like, say, CNN can. So if I try to expose somebody on my show, they're only being exposed to my audience. Whereas, again, like I say, it's exposure of scale. You can really only take people out and destroy their credibility if you're indeed a larger entity than they are to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Or you could do death by a million cuts.
But you can't have a million cuts if you ain't got a million people doing the cutting.
True. All right. So anyways, I would like to move on. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're just going to go start the new topic, talk about the whole assault rifle, guns, whatever, Second Amendment. So I'm going to play this song. Since Monday is Martin Luther King Day, I would like to play this song, which is basically auto-tuned from one of his speeches. So come back. This is the Crouch Out Radio Show, kicking the issues right in the balls.
Let us rise up tonight with a greater readiness. Let us stand with a greater determination. Let us move on. Powerful days, these days of challenge.
America, running on the beat. We've got some difficulties with you, but it doesn't matter what we got. Because I can't imagine the club, and I'm left over. I see the promised land. I may not get married, but I want you to know tonight that we are the people who will get to the promised land. I'm all for it. I'm all in the middle of my very end. And I knew that if they were sitting in, they were really standing up for the best in the American dream. Taking the whole nation back to those 3 pounds of democracy, which were done big by the founding fathers. And the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. We've got some difficult days to see, but it doesn't matter what we know. Because I've been to the mountaintop, and I'm looked over. I see the promised land.
Tuned of Martin Luther King on his speech, and yeah, it still amazes me that it took him to inspire people to realize, oh, shit is fucked up. You know, if there was no Martin Luther King, no one would have gotten off their asses to march. You know, I do.
Can I
yeah.
interject here? Because
yeah.
you made that point earlier in the show, and I wanted to make a point to it, but we kind of got caught up in the conversation.
Yeah.
History is littered with individuals who have led everybody else, either
yeah.
into tyranny or into freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And what somebody else said to me last night, he's a conspiracy theorist like me, and he was very, very happy to see somebody else who knew 9/11 was an inside job and
okay.
knew the facts and figures and things of that nature or whatever.
All right.
And he said, yeah, but what can I do about it? And I said to him, look, bro, that mentality, what can I do about it, as if it's a rhetorical question, a question that does not require an answer, is the very reason why we're currently under the control of the few that control so much. When in reality, you are the one person in this world who can make the difference. You know, one individual is always the one who makes all the difference. Many individuals together, traditionally throughout revolutions, no more than 5% of a population in any given revolution, regardless of whether or not it's a revolution that winds up in a tyranny dictatorship or a revolution that winds up in a free society. No more than 1 out of 20 people have actually been involved in it, and 95% of people would just sit back and let everything happen. The sheep will follow whichever shepherds you put in front of them. You just got to wonder, who are the shepherds that we are following now? Are they the ones that are leading us to greener pastures, Well, those were leading us into a meat grinder.
Yeah, I mean, but this actually reminds me of a time when I was still on MySpace. Oof. They had a section where, you know, who's your hero? I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone remembers that. You know, hey, who are one of your heroes? And I put, fuck it, I'm my own hero. You know, because you really, I put that after you start realizing, you know, the illusion of who you look up to starts getting smashed by what they do. I mean, I at one time when I first started up, I looked up to Alex Jones. Now I think he's a scumbag. I thought Luke was a brother, you know, now he's a scumbag. You know, I was friends with a lot of other people, and it turns out a lot of them turned out to be scumbags, you know. And really, I mean, I keep trying to find this punk song. It's called "All My Heroes Are Dead." All my heroes are dead. You know, and really, it's just fuck it. It's really time to Sleepy's messaging me. Gun control, Louis. Yeah. So, anyways, yeah. Just want to answer that.
Could I segue this into the gun control?
I actually got this quote that I want to read from this book, The United States Constitution, A Graphic Adaptation, and just want to read this part, and we'll segue into guns. The Second Amendment, one that often sparks controversy, actually deals with two separate ideas: the militia and the right to bear arms. As we have seen before, there were police forces or a military. The militia was an institution in society. Its members organized to protect their farms and towns. They were not vigilantes. They were armed citizens with vested interest in their communities. What Americans and British subjects before them distrusted most were mercenaries, guns for hire with no community ties and no loyalty to them, anyone but those who paid them. They did not represent the people. To the anti-federalists, an armed people were a check on government power. They sought assurances the government would not put a mercenary force between itself and the people or take away their weapons if they did. Article the Fourth, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It says, if the First Amendment rights are not absolute, should the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms be? The Second Amendment delivers on both counts with its opening clause. It certifies that the militia is legitimate. It goes on to confirm that the people retain the right to possess and use firearms for self-defense, for hunting, game, for sport, as a bulwark against tyranny. In the militia's heyday, guns were a crucial part of daily life. Some states had laws requiring men to own guns. Virtually all the framers owned them. Militiamen had fought in the Revolution, and in the end, the 1792 U.S. Militia Act obliged men for 18 to 45 to enroll in their local militias. Still, there were always laws regulating the use of firearms, for example, ordinances against shooting them near barns or buildings. So, and I bring this up because, of course, no matter what you think about the whole Sandy Hook, whether it was a false flag or not, I don't know yet. I'm looking into that. It really sparked, you know, a lot of people saying, we need to ban all guns. We don't need guns. We have some Pierce Morgan who should be in jail for what he's done in his own country. He's hiding out here, and CNN is aiding and abetting a criminal, in my opinion, saying that, why do Americans need guns? People are dying from guns. And I'm sad to say, all I have are the cliche arguments. Like, look at Chicago. Chicago banned handguns. They're the highest murder capital in the city. You know, of course, you make these laws, you know, it doesn't stop the criminals. That's another cliche argument. And you know, they like, and the other side likes to shame, saying,
oh, well, you know, oh, shit, you're a conspiracy nut because you think, you know, you want to have a gun to protect yourself from the evil government. Oh, you must be crazy. But it's in the Constitution. The point that I made before was, look, didn't we fight by we, I mean Americans, didn't we Americans fight back in the day against a tyrannical government to gain our freedom? Who's to say that can't happen again?
What I find interesting is going back onto that hero complex thing we're going is that we hold the founding fathers in such high esteem. And I find what happens is that you have other people as examples to follow, yet people just see them as examples and don't follow their principles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this leads to a lot of disillusionment. Like if you get let down, and what I found is interesting is that a lot of people that I thought were my heroes throughout history, historical figures, you know, like you said, all their heroes are dead. Is that I find out later on that they weren't all roses and rainbow type characters. A lot of them were real scum. And I think that just because you're a bit of a scumbag doesn't mean you only do bad things. And what's interesting is the term disillusionment. A friend of mine was talking about this gun ban legislation on Facebook the other day, talking about how throughout history, every single culture that has enforced a gun ban has had the murder rate go up or the population be subsequently enslaved or exterminated. And his friend says, "Oh, you're just totally disillusioned." And he was like, "Bro, are you criticizing me by pointing out that I'm no longer operating under an illusion?"
That's a good point. I mean the gun ban in New York especially, our governor signed a gun ban that limits the amount of bullets. Like, okay, so you got less bullets, so that's just gonna force me to better my aim so that way I save on ammo.
Lily, can you recall a place in America or any other that has passed a gun ban where the murder rate hasn't subsequently skyrocketed?
Well, yeah, Chicago. I had mentioned that before. Chicago, Illinois. I mean, more children are dying than what that were killed or allegedly killed in Sandy Hook, Connecticut.
Yeah.
I mean, in New York, the amount of bullets you can have in your gun, which in New York City, forget about even getting a gun. A handgun takes a better part of a year and $2,000 in legal fees, $2,000 or more in legal fees. I know, I'm trying to get my gun license as a security officer. It's $2,000 plus $600, and then you still gotta buy the gun, and you know every year you gotta be recertified.
Isn't that funny? How you run yourself broke.
Yeah.
Just so that you can prevent yourself from getting mugged.
Yeah, what's the point? And you want to know what's the funny thing? I've never had a gun pulled out on me, but I've had a knife pulled out on me. In fact, a few years ago, I had to defend myself barehanded. Well, at the time I had a cane, but I was able to use that, you know, against someone with a knife.
Well, what's funny is what I find interesting, real interesting, is that look, what do they do? They made controlled substances like narcotics, hallucinogens, opiates, and barbiturates illegal, right? But we have a massive problem with huge drug trafficking in this country. Criminals, okay, the criminal element will always find a way to acquire these things. That nutcase, that these nut jobs who go in these mass murder sprees, they don't register their weapons with the government. They don't go to a Walmart and pick up these weapons. They acquire these weapons illegally.
Not in the case of Taylor Lautner and the Aurora shooter.
they got their guns legally. What happened was they ignored the law about mental defect, and they were allowed to get it. In fact, the warnings that were put in place, the laws that were already on the books to put in place to prevent this from happening, were not followed. Yet they take it out on legal citizens, law-abiding citizens that have done it the legal way. They limit.
Let me get this straight. Because somebody broke the law,
yep.
You don't punish that person who broke the existing law. You change the existing law to prevent people from breaking it, which they broke in the first place, which they wouldn't have not broken even if the law was different.
You got me cross. You got me like freaking cross-eyed here. How the hell did you form that sentence, man?
Yeah, I do that a lot. You're talking earlier about the Second Amendment being a bulwark against invasion,
mm-hmm.
That reminded me of the Japanese admiral who attacked Pearl Harbor. He said it would be madness to attack the continental U.S. because we'd have a gun pointed at us from behind every blade of grass.
Look at this situation. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that they're going to be talking about banning guns and putting such a tighter control on guns. They don't realize that these nutcases, criminal nutcases, are now going to start getting more creative. Now they're going to start using household chemicals, okay, household cleaners and shit, to basically put that together and create explosives like C4 grade explosives. So what are they going to do now? You can't go buy Windex anymore. You can't go buy bleach Clorox anymore. You can't go buy. I mean, what do you want us to do?
We're gonna have to start
with freaking orange peels or something.
Yeah, let's ban Crisco too while we're at it.
Hey, easy. How we're gonna get the fucking flavor in the food? Goddamn kiwis, trying to fuck. Don't give them any other. Don't give them any fucking ideas.
There was a mama joke I heard way back in the day. It's like, your mama's so fat, when she broke her leg, Crisco came out.
Well, actually, it's your mama's so fat, when she sweats Crisco.
Yes, and when she broke her leg, gravy came out. Sorry, I got that.
Of course, your mama's so fat, chocolate milk comes out her titties. Yeah. Okay, on and on. Moving on! But, I mean, it's just they limit the bullets. And, I mean, Pierce Morgan had these two ladies on. I wish I should have downloaded the audio. But he had these two ladies on, and they were all pro-gun. And one of the ladies made the point, like, look, there was this news report where this gentleman was being attacked by multiple people, and he didn't have enough bullets to defend himself. Because of the limitations that were already in place.
This is the very point. And there's a great documentary that one of my friends, who is the treasurer of the New Zealand Deer Stalkers Association, he has a number of weapons.
Deer stalkers?
Deer stalkers, like people who hunt deer, right?
Oh, okay. I thought they follow them, see where they go to work. It's like, I'm watching you, deer.
Yeah.
What you wearing, deer? Just totally just start stalking deer. Yeah. Just hide behind a blade of grass and start watching them while they shit in the woods. Yeah, deer stalkers. Okay, go ahead.
Call their cell phones in the middle of the night in the middle of the bush. Anyway.
Yeah. Just start breathing heavy, like okay.
Just two rings and hang up usually.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Anyway, well, what I was gonna say, and I wanted to illustrate this point, because this is the undeniable fact. And I tried to touch on it before about how when you ban guns the murder rate goes up, but it's actually much deeper than that. And you can have a look at a number of different examples. Earliest example that I can really think of off the top of my head that I don't even know anything about is England, under Edward the Longshanks, banned swords and crossbows and bows of really any kind for the Scots. And this is the reason why the revolution was fought with William Wallace. So banning weapons foments revolutions. And also, banning weapons means that you are attacking and enslaving and trying to prevent a population from being able to fight back against their oppression. Then, even in Turkey, they banned guns for Armenians and said, "Hand in your guns, and you will be set free, and we won't oppress you anymore." And then they handed them their guns, and then they took their guns off them, and then shot them in the head. They then weren't being trusting enough to come in personally and hand in the guns. So they said to the wives of these men who were fighters, "Hand in your husband's guns and we'll give you food for your family." So the wife would bring the guns and their children to hand in the guns and then take the food back. They would take the guns and then shoot them in the head. They killed 1.1 million Armenians.
Yeah, I mean,
Stalin, Stalin banned guns in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Then he confiscated all of their food stocks, all of their grains. This is on the wealthiest, most fertile land ever. And 7 million plus people starved to death inside of a year, much larger than the Holocaust. And it was said at that time that the most terrifying thing to behold in the Ukraine was somebody who had flesh on their bones, because
right.
you knew that they were eating human flesh.
Wow.
And the Indians, under the British rule, had weapons banned, and when assault tax was introduced, this is what Gandhi actually really used as an instigation for the revolution. People had nothing to fight back against. In South Africa, it was illegal for the blacks to own guns, and they were always getting beaten up and shot in the back, running away by the police and military. In Nazi Germany, the last people to be legislated against to lose their rights were gun owners. As soon as the gun owners turned in their guns, that's when the Holocaust began. And it is the exact same story every single time. Anytime anybody tries to ban weapons in any way, that population gets subsequently enslaved and or exterminated. It's inescapable, unarguable, unavoidable. They don't want people to know this.
So then here's
highly
the question.
Recommend people watch that documentary. It's on YouTube, Innocence Betrayed. It's real
eye-opener. So here's the question then. They passed these up. They passed these procedures. And the real question then becomes, when will it be our turn?
I think it's your turn now. Obama's signing it by executive order. People are buying up guns like there's no tomorrow, so I hear. I think it's coming right now.
When is it set to go into effect?
Does it matter? The fact is they're doing it. And it's happening right now. What I dislike about people when they ask the when is this going to happen is that it's often because they're waiting to act, whereas the time to act is now.
Yesterday would have been better.
Yes, completely right.
So what I'm asking, the reason I'm asking is I want to go purchase an assault rifle before it becomes illegal, but
because there's already a gun bubble. ARs have been tripling in price. They're doing extensive background checks already. I mean, it's too late. I'm sorry. I mean, it kind of sucks for me too, because me and a couple other folks were considering some things, but it's too late. I mean, you should have done it before. If you haven't, either through some fault of your own or through no fault of your own, as is the case with me and a couple other people, it's too late. Now, the good news is that it very well may happen that maybe nothing apocalyptic or dare shall I say, revolutionary, quote unquote, can happen or would happen. And it may just be like the bubble that happened last year in December, or the Obama gun scare 2009 bubble that not a lot of people seem to have conveniently forgotten about. So this is at least the third one, if not fourth, but maybe I'm missing a year or so. Mm-hmm. So what I would recommend for you is don't buy anything, don't waste your money, and worst case scenario happens, you know, study guerrilla warfare. Best case scenario, the bubble goes down and then the prices stabilize, and I would suggest you also get a firearms blue book. If you haven't already, so you can start studying market prices. When the prices have stabilized, give it like 6 months to a year or thereabouts, but once the price is stabilized, then do your comparison shopping, do your due diligence, and then pick your items and your most important ones and go there. But this is absolutely an awful time. There have been various firearms manufacturers where orders are back ordered by 7 months.
Yeah,
and that's for parts, not the entire package. So this is a horrible time to buy right now.
Yeah, excuse me, gentlemen. Two things. Before Pat wants to give his opinion, but Christy asks. Vinny, after Pat, why don't you tell us about the gun rights in New Zealand?
Yeah, we really don't have a whole lot of gun rights in New Zealand. We're restricted to 10 clip mags already in order to own any weapon of any kind that shoots projectiles. You have to have a safe that is at least 3 inches thick steel that is bolted to the floor and to the wall. How many people who are living in rental properties do you think own guns in this country?
Probably zero.
We do not have a home is his castle principle. If somebody comes into your house and you shoot them because they invaded your house and were trying to rob you or something of that nature, you go down for manslaughter.
Wow. So I could come into your house and start watching your cable and start watching some Cinemax and, you know, yeah, start playing myself. Anyways, Pat,
can I finish? I just want to finish on that as well.
All right.
Because the proviso is on the home is your castle principle is that you have to say to the police officer who's about to arrest you for manslaughter, I felt my life was in danger. You have to say those exact words. Otherwise, you wind up going to jail. If you thought your life was in danger and you say those exact words, then you have a self-defense argument and you're allowed to still remain free. If not, you wind up going to jail, even if your life was in danger and you felt life was in danger if you forget to say those words.
That's similar in New York because if you're even if you're empty-handed, you could only beat the crap out of someone enough so that way you could run away. You can't stay, even if they're trying to kill you, you can't stand and use the same amount of force. I mean, this is what they teach you in security officer school. You could only do enough. You're not a police officer. You can't arrest anyone. You can only do citizen's arrest, but you know, that's probably not what your employer will want, but you know, you can only do enough to get away. You can't, you know,
true here as well. We have the equalization of force principle. If somebody attacks you with a knife, you're not allowed to pull a gun on them. You're only allowed to pull a knife on them to defend yourself.
You're not even, in New York City, you're not even allowed to carry a knife. You can't carry any type of weapon on you. So I mean, so like I said, I've had knives pulled out on me, and you know, it's just it's just by pure luck, honestly.
One of my friends illegally carries a switchblade and illegally carries a pellet gun pistol. That is this cock action, just in case.
Does he wear
a
leather jacket?
No, he kept it in his backpack. And you know what was interesting is that he's never used them, not once. And he would never use them to commit a crime. He would only use them for self-defense. And for him to have something of that nature for self-defense in that very, very rare possible occasion where you would need it, he'd be committing a crime. In fact, he's committing a crime every time he leaves his house with those in his backpack.
Yeah, I mean, it's really ridiculous that, you know, the laws make you either you die or you go to jail.
Hey, I also wanted to address the learn guerrilla tactics thing. You know what really, really scares the hell out of troops? Snipers.
Oh.
You don't need an assault rifle in order to take out a lot of people. You have a look at, say, the Battle of Stalingrad, who specifically targeted officers and sniping them all the time. They're terrified. Absolutely terrified, because there's no fracking defense. You can't see them coming. And unless they fire twice from the same location, you don't know where the bullet track came from either. So if you fire once, get a headshot, then move position and fire again, you're still in cover. And it's a very, very extraordinarily good tactic. So if they're running out of AR-15s, my recommendation from a military tactic point of view would be a long rifle of really in any kind you can get. Higher caliber, the better. But ultimately, you don't need a whole lot of rounds per clip, because you're going to be firing from a long way off.
All right, then. Anyways, Patrick, you want to say something?
Yeah, like, I want to talk about this gun issue. Like, I'm pro-gun. I think people should be allowed to have guns to defend themselves. I agree with the whole point that, like, if you make guns illegal, the criminals are still going to find a way to get guns.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at, like, what's going on, like, when you have Alex Jones going on Piers Morgan and making a complete fool out of himself, you gotta, like... Like, that guy isn't really on the side of guns. That guy, like, I swear to God, that guy is going on that show trying to make anyone who's pro-gun look like a raving lunatic, conspiracy theorist, blah, 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 whatever you want to call it.
Anybody who's listened to the Alex Jones show for any extended period of time knows that he does get like that periodically.
Yeah.
And something he did mention, and I think this is actually a self-evident truth, is that if you calmly explain to people that they're about to be killed, they don't get it.
Right.
If you scream it at them, on the other hand, even though they might initially think you're nuts, somewhere down the track, they wake up because of the shock and the trauma of it. And nobody can deny he's woken up more people in this movement than any other single figure. And I think it's partly because of that tactic. I mean, is America not all about shock and awe?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's like they want to control the opposition. You know, like it's like the Hegelian dialectic, and they want to control the people who oppose them to controlling the people who are pro-establishment. And so they put people who are supposedly anti-establishment out there and make them famous through their mainstream networks. Like if he was a real person, CNN and all those mainstream news shows would never let him on. But the fact they let him on to make himself look like a dumbass and make himself look crazy and make people who follow him look crazy. And that's the whole point of it. It's all like propaganda, and he's totally part of it. And he's, you know, and
Could I interject something here? Because a journalist named Alistair Bone traveled 200 kilometers to come see me and interview me and watch me do a radio show, and did a 2.5-page spread on me in a mainstream newspaper. does that mean I'm working for the opposition? Because if you, as soon as you get any kind of mainstream recognition, you're automatically a disinfo agent who's part of the establishment?
I would say you are.
Well, I obviously, this has got a good point here. That sounds kind of arbitrary. Pat, something I just want to mention is that I think a lot of people are concerned about AJ's theatrical performance. Let's call it what it is. But I would say on the good news side of it, look at two other interviews that Piers Morgan did regarding the gun control issue. Look at the interview, and it's on YouTube, and it's for all the listeners. Go to YouTube either now or later, and type in the keywords for Piers Morgan, and then add Larry Pratt, that interview, and watch how Larry Pratt behaves. Also watch the other one that Piers Morgan did with a Marine. His name is Joshua Boston. Joshua Boston. Look for those two interviews Piers Morgan did with Joshua Boston and Larry Pratt. Larry Pratt and Joshua Boston handled themselves pretty close to about as perfectly as you can get, diplomatically speaking. They were calm. They were reasoned. Sure, Vincent, the whole shock and awe propaganda method can't have its but there's a seat.
And also, let's not forget that he's a Texan, and they have their own particular brand of charm.
Oh yeah, I read somewhere. Hold on, I've read somewhere that Texas is totally opposing this this ban, and also opposing the limitation of the bullets, and that if any federal agent tries to arrest someone, that their local, the local police, this will arrest that federal agent.
So, sorry, can you repeat that, Louie?
Texas has threatened that if any federal agent tries to arrest anyone that violates the president's bullet ban or the assault rifle ban, that the local police will arrest that federal agent.
That reminds me of something Christopher Green told me from Greenwave Radio. He was thinking about moving from Arizona to Texas for precisely reasons like this. It really is the Lone Star State. It really is the, well, I think if you were to classify what it is to have the quote-unquote American spirit in terms of close to the Revolution and the Founding Fathers as you can get, it appears to me as though Texas is really the center of it all. And what is it about Texas where that mentality has survived so strongly, whereas other states have waned?
It was its own country. It won the Texas Revolution in 1835 and 36 against Santa Anna when he violated the Mexican Constitution and started sacking all the different Mexican states. And at that time, Texas and Coahuila is now part of Mexico, but Texas and Coahuila were the same state at one point. And so when Santa Anna went raping and killing and pillaging, and oh, by the way, for anyone who wants to study the Texas Revolution, please, please, please study the Battle of Zacatecas. That was the equivalent. That was the real Alamo, by the way. That was a big, big deal. Also, study the Zacatecas militia and what they did wrong, and so we don't copy that. But basically, to answer your question, Vincent, it's because Texas had its own revolution and was its own country for about a decade before it was annexed into the United States. I think that has a lot to do with it. I think that's the simplest, most concise way to put it. You look at any of the other 49 states in what I think is a highly overrated union. And you don't really see that anywhere else.
May I ask, to clarify, usually after 100 years or so, people forget entirely unless there is some part of an educational program or cultural days of remembrance in order to keep the memory of such things alive. Is there part of the Texas State School curriculum where it specifically teaches about the Texas Revolution, I wonder?
I would point, in that case, while there is some level of proof of that, I would instead like to point you towards the Texas Homeschool Association. They have been battling legally, not physically, of course, the Texas state government, who have been trying for at least since, oh gosh, what is it, 20, 30 years now? A long time, still do, trying to put their coercive hand in every Texan household. And fortunately, THSC has done a wonderful job. But you ask about why is there such a, I guess you could say, a cultural heritage that's uniquely Texan. I would say it's because of homeschoolers as well as other cultural elements within the it's pretty, I mean, it's like a different country here. And I should know because I live here. It's really its own deal. And to put it another way, there's a couple of cutesy pride phrases that some people have pointed out. For example, United States, Texas can go without the United States, but the United States can't make it without Texas.
Now this also reminds me of James Wright. His hometown is Dallas, and he said that Dallas smells of oil. Right, you can smell the oil in the air from all the oil fields. Is that why Texas has maintained much of its independent spirit? Because they are simply not economically dependent upon the central government and its economic strategies for the United States as a whole?
That's part of the reason. I mean, to be fair, we're supposed to be talking about gun control, but to briefly sum up, there are many, many reasons, both historically, culturally, and I would also like to add in one element that people don't really take into account, which I think you were alluding to a little bit, which is economically. For example, we here in Texas have our own power grid. There's a lot of other aspects. Yeah, you could say a little bit about oil and a few other things, but, you know, there's also a lot of high-tech companies here, especially right here in the capital, right here in Austin. There's a lot of elements where, and yeah, I mean, some people make noise about secession, but that's really kind of a diversion. The point is that Texas has a very healthy cultural identity. Sometimes it can get skewed, sure, but it's very much of a libertarian bent. It's very much about self-government, very much about limited government, very much about what the founders want. In fact, we here in Texas have our own founding fathers, such as Sam Houston and Jim Bowie and Stephen Austin and so forth. So there's a very strong tradition of liberty here.
Can I also ask for clarification? It appears nationalistic in nature. Is there a culture in Texas that Texas is really its own nation, and do they not really consider themselves as Texans part of the America? They consider themselves Texans in a greater sense.
Well, what about, I mean, you guys are talking about an independent a spirit of independence and self-sufficient or self-free agency. What about all the laws and the state constitution of New Hampshire? They have pretty liberal gun laws over there themselves. Not to mention they allow a lot more latitude towards small businesses and small market economics than any other state does.
Yeah, but I doubt anybody's really ever complained about
states.
I doubt anybody's ever really ever kind of been taken aback about the forcefulness and the extremeness of New Hampshireites as they do with Texans.
That's true. I agree with that.
Well,
when you hear Texas, you think of it, rawr! And when you hear New Hampshire, it's like, rawr!
Well, obviously there are iconic images and so forth, but obviously the reality is very different. I mean, generally speaking, a lot of people here are pretty much mainline Americans, what would be referred to as the term I don't like, which is sheeple. Unfortunately, but of course, just like anywhere else in the United States, the more rural you get, the more that, I don't want to say old school, but that more of that notion, a serious understanding of liberty takes place. Not
well,
always true.
Exactly. That's the point I was going to make. Yeah, you're on your own, and then all of a sudden somebody tries to tell you, well, what you've been doing for years is not wrong. You think, who the fuck are you to be telling me what to do? And you're more inclined to just fight back or just not even listen to that person. It's like, well, you're never here, you don't do nothing for me, and yet you're gonna tell me how to live my life. Yeah, eat a dick, you know?
Yeah, like
You didn't help me build that bridge across the river, boy. You didn't help me move my cows anywhere. You're coming onto my land. You're trying to take my fucking corn. Fuck you.
Let's not forget that urbanization in Texas really didn't happen until, I don't know, maybe after World War II. Because until then, you had pretty much street justice. You know, everyone was carrying a weapon. It was a way of life, just like you're saying. Now you're saying, oh, we're gonna take your guns away, and every single person in Texas, their firearm has become a third appendage, basically. It has become a literal arm. Like they don't go anywhere without that weapon. They may forget to wear their underwear, and they certainly do sometimes forget to wear their deodorant, no offense, but they will never forget their guns at home.
Yeah, but then again,
it's part of their identity.
And even if it's not, it's just a tool. It's just a tool. It's like a car, any other invention that the free market, the legitimate free market, actually produces that have actually made all of our lives better, and even our parents' lives better, you know, beforehand. I mean, a lot of people didn't have refrigeration. Refrigeration as a technological innovation was really kind of a linchpin that opened up a lot of things. The same could be said for firearms and automobiles, and I would also say computers, which is what we're using right now.
And also,
the most important thing about refrigeration is that modern Texas would not exist without air conditioning.
Boom. Anyways, and also let's keep in mind that really, if it wasn't for guns, none of us would be here. Because they would, if it wasn't for guns, they wouldn't. We wouldn't have won World War II. And depending on what you believe, I mean, we would have gotten taken over by someone, and literally none of us would be here right now. None of us would be talking on the radio. Because either we wouldn't exist, or it would just be a whole different world.
Now, Lily, there's a lot of truth to what you're saying there, and I wanted to add this, mm-hmm. is that basically the only reason why the human race still is in possession of weapons is that we're not perfect yet. There are still scumbags out there who will hurt you.
Exactly.
And it's best to not be defenseless. You could be very hopeful and very naive and think that nobody's going to hurt you or exterminate you or enslave you, but that's just not the case, not yet.
Well,
maybe one day when the whole world is holding hands and we're singing fucking Kumbaya around a goddamn campfire,
I like
maybe
that song.
Then we'll all get rid of our weapons, but not yet.
Yeah, I mean, there's this saying, hope for peace, prepare for war. I mean, and that's, unfortunately, that's the nature of the scenario. I mean, every time you walk out that door, you gotta think, is this the day where some scumbag is going to come into my job and open fire? Is this the day some scumbag is going to try to push me into the subway tracks? Is this the day where I'm going to have to fight for my life and protect myself or somebody else I care about? And you always, you got to keep that in the back of your mind. Like, okay, if I do this, I mean, this is like last week when we were discussing rape culture. I mean, you gotta keep your head to you. You gotta see, you know, you gotta have these, you gotta think of these constant scenarios where if you go into a certain situation or certain decisions that you make, is it gonna cause harm to you or is going to attract a certain bad element to you? So it's like Vinny said, we're not in Shangri-La yet. This is not
something that reminds me of what Jack Blood told me. Mm-hmm. There's no utopia.
Exactly. There is, and there never will be. What do you guys think of going overtime?
I won't be able to. My girlfriend's really tired, and so am I, and she just wants to kind of watch a movie, and she can't do this and share the same internet connection while I'm on radio, so she'd be pretty pissed if I went in overtime, man.
Alrighty, so, just putting it out there, because we got like 9 minutes left, and a point that I want to bring up, the NRA actually came out with commercials criticizing the president. He used children when he was signing the executive orders on Wednesday, and the NRA came out calling him a hypocrite, saying, "Hey, you have your kids protected by guns." And again, I have to refer to this Martin Luther King documentary I saw last night. He was getting death threats, and the threats were real. In fact, he was stabbed by a black woman when he was signing books in Harlem. So, I mean, there were people actually gunning for him, and he and his aides were, like, begging him to carry weapons to protect his life that was obviously in danger. And he made sure that they didn't carry no type of weapons.
Mm. So I'd like to add on to that, particularly within the black community. There's a great book, something about Tupac Shakur, the suppression of black leaders, and something like that. But the instance that I wanted to talk about is actually the Black Panthers, who were a militant African-American organization. And what I found most interesting in this part of the documentary is that the police were always gunning for the Black Panthers. The Black Panthers never pulled guns on police unless the police were beating up a black person who was innocent, and then they'd suddenly turn up with all their weapons, point them at the cops and say, "Stop beating that innocent person." And the cops would stop, and not a shot would be fired.
Well, the thing is, I mean, we also got to keep in mind the Black Panthers were infiltrated by the CIA and given the weapons, and, you know, COINTELPRO. That's
exactly. It was one of the progenitors of it. Tupac's uncle. This is another interesting part of the documentary.
The Black Panthers were a peaceful organization. In fact, in New York City, they worked with a Puerto Rican group and the white group of the Young Lords, the Puerto Rican group, and the Sons of Liberty to help build community programs to help feed children and get things done. And of course,
anybody who's successful at freeing repressed minorities, they get targeted by the government and authorities.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the worst things, stories I've heard out of that entire ordeal was, I think it was Tupac's uncle, he was staying at his friend's place because the cops were gunning for him at his own house. So he stayed at his mate's place, and they slept on the floor, and they were woken up by the entire front of the house being riddled with bullets. I think there was like 30, 40 cops outside, and they just shot up the whole house. Didn't even say come out or anything, just started shooting. And because they were lying on the floor, they didn't get hit. And then they said, if there's anybody still alive in there, you know, shoot first, ask people to come out innocently later, come out now. And Tupac's uncle stripped down to his bare ass, totally naked, all right? And he said to his friend, "You come out naked too, otherwise they'll say that you had a gun on you or something like that, and they'll shoot you." And so he came out buck naked, 40 guns trained on him, not a shot fired. Friend didn't listen to him. He came out wearing his pants, and they shot and killed him.
Tupac's mom was a Black Panther, and when she was arrested, she was in jail, and she's afraid that she's going to give birth to Tupac while she was in jail, and he would be put in, like, the foster home program and stuff. And a miracle happened, and she was released from jail, you know, like, months before he was born. Well, what, in my opinion, what really happened was they made a deal with her to make Tupac one of their MKUltra slaves, hip-hop stars, and he was all about programming the black people to follow the New World Order and all that.
The gangster culture, that's right, and he was co-opted into that, and then later tried to undo what he did. In fact, he was central to brokering a peace treaty between the Bloods and the Crips, and he was assassinated before being able to complete the deal, and the war continues today.
And it keeps
them all fighting with each other so that the government can just keep control of it. You know, it's just strange, same old divide and conquer, COINTELPRO, the whole way through Black American history. It's really disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah, they murdered him in front of the Luxor, which is a pyramid in Las Vegas, which is, you know, like a pyramid hotel, like black pyramid hotel with the light shining out of the top of it. That's where he got.
And then made calls to rival gangs on East Coast and West Coast, saying it was him that shot him, or it was him that attacked him, and then we defended ourselves and things like that. And they fomented an even bigger war when it was just the fracking government, these fracking scumbags who don't give a frack about anybody else but power and corruption and scumbagery.
What they do before they assassinate someone is they bring them down in the public eye. Like, they were accusing Tupac of molesting and raping this girl, and they sent him to jail for a number of years. And while he was in jail, people were coming up to him telling him about the Illuminati, and you've been set up, and, like, the Illuminati this and that. And he didn't believe any of that. He thought the Illuminati was just an excuse for you not to go out there and make money. And that's why he created this album called Kill Illuminati. And, yeah, then they pretty much killed him right before that album came out. And, yeah, the rest is history, I guess. I don't know.
All right. So, anyways, like to get everyone's final statements. Let's start with Sleepy. Sleepy, you wanna say something about the subject before we close out the show?
Yeah, sure. Gun control is not really about guns. It's about control of people.
Control, yeah.
Yeah, it's control of people.
Gun control isn't about guns. It's about control. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
or people control, if you want to put it that way. And whenever you get rid of the tools that people need to defend themselves with, you're paving the way for democide, which is death by government. And democide is the leading natural cause of unnatural death amongst human beings. Now, considering that, there's also, now, unfortunately, I hate to criticize some of the folks on our side, but, well, here goes. The problem with arguing about so-called gun rights, think of it this way. Gun rights advocates say that laws don't prevent criminals from obtaining a firearm if they really want one. Great. Then by that logic, laws don't prevent tyrants from trampling your rights. Since that is in fact the case, why are the guns rights advocates always screaming for laws to be retracted or put into place to ensure their right of ownership? If a law cannot prevent a criminal from obtaining a firearm, then the law cannot prevent you from obtaining one or otherwise grant you the ability to have one. So why do gun rights advocates insist on the reinstatement of law? Most likely, they either do not understand what the law is, or worse, it is because, this is the key point, it is because they don't have any intention of ever using their firearms. It's much easier to say, please, Daddy, give me an okay to do, fill in the blank. If Daddy says no, they pout and wail, but that's all they're going to do. Now they have an excuse to be a coward. And since most people believe in the illusion of laws, and really I'm talking about statutes, not proper law, our society is rife with cowards masquerading as patriots, nationalists, activists, rebels, revolutionaries, and other words that should only be reserved for real men and brave women. Put another way, it's not the tools that's to be controlled. What they're trying to do is control how you think and how you act and what your attitude is. What we need, more than anything else, is a reinstatement of the virtue of courage among all political dissidents who are serious about securing their liberties.
I'd like to add on to that the international
Go ahead, Vinny. What's your final say?
Okay, and I want to make this quick because we're already going over time.
Yeah.
The UN, let's not forget about them. Let's not forget about the big magnum that's in the front of the UN building that is tied in a knot. They are behind gun control all over the world. They are behind the world government that wants to disarm the planet. It is not just the Americans that will suffer from gun control. But that said, if America falls, if the last bastion of freedom, of self-defense, of liberty dies, this world dies with it. So I want to encourage and remind all the Americans, regardless of what state you live in, regardless of if you're an expat or living in other countries. I may be 10,000 clicks from you in New Zealand, but I'm behind you 100%. And I had a conversation with a number of other New Zealanders today for which that mentality that I just expressed is also in the forefront of their minds. Fight, and we will come to your aid.
All right. Who's next? Who's calling from Texas? James.
Yeah, I'm here.
You want to say anything?
No. I'll tell you what, though. This makes me want to write an article here pretty soon, so I'm going to go ahead and put something together and tie this into first principles, because I'll tell you, without those, we're all lost.
Okay, then. All right, who's calling from North Dakota? Patrick.
Yeah, I would just say study propaganda, how they manipulate you. Learn to think for yourself and avoid all these. Like, learn about propaganda and public relations and how they try and influence your thoughts and try and claim your own thoughts for yourself. And that's basically all you can do. And fuck Louis V.
Oh, well, fuck you too, Sue. Fucking hate Pat sometimes. Say a fucking wise ass. Anyways, who's calling from Cali again? Okay, who's calling from California?
Fuck, I don't know what it would show up on my Skype number. That's probably
yes, you, Mike. You, fuck's sake.
Yeah, thanks very much. Anyway, when there are unjust laws, it's necessary to break them. Everybody needs to purchase a disobey T-shirt with Gandhi's face right on it.
Alrighty then.
Disobedience is the way to go. Fuck the New World Order. Disobey their laws.
All right.
I'd like to close off to encapsulate that, because you mentioned Martin Luther King a number of times. His famous quote was, when injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. Thank you very much, everybody. I'm Vinny Eastwood from The Vinny Eastwood Show. Just Google me up on American Freedom Radio, and we'll see you again sometime.
With Will! So, anyways.
No, there's no Will.
No Will!
I broke his Will.
Oh. Will's decomposing in Australia. He got sent over. So, anyways, I had to throw that out. So, I can't say nothing better. I got nothing. So, anyways, like to thank everyone for listening to today's show. Come back next week. Fuck it, prank call show next week. Or I'm off Monday. Prank call show tomorrow. How's that? We do something serious, now we go with the comedy again, have some fun. So come back tomorrow, prank call show, have your phone numbers ready for me to fuck with the world. Anyways, like to thank Christy, Kaleo, Mike. Listen to Vinny Eastwood, TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. And if you can't spell that, then you're fucking retarded.
It's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, as in, go ahead, make my news.
Yes. And if you listen to his show, he will send you pictures of his penis. So also go to Sleepy Salsa's blog, The Last Bastille. That's Bastille spelled BASTILLE. .wordpress.com, thelastbastille.com. Check him out. He's a fantastic writer. My blog, of course, you're on it if you're listening to it live, but if not, it's rantinglouisb.blogspot.com. Please feel free to use my Amazon link to help support me, get me some hostess cakes and, whatnot. I'm just kidding. Anyways.
He's not kidding.
Shit.
Don't fucking blow up my spot, Vinny. I want some delicious Hostess cakes, and the people won't get me Hostess cakes if I just straight up ask for it, because they'll be like, well, I don't want to contribute to Louis diabetes. So anyways, this has been the Crowd Shot Radio Show, from my house to your house. Mahalo.
And that's the end of my show, donk.